It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me.
What?
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
This man ate till he burst.
So he did die by eating.
Lunch Hour Reviews.
I'm tainting me.
Tainting me!
It's feeding time.
I'm Darren.
And I'm Mindy, and we are the Rants Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of The Rants Macabre, please visit fangoria.com.
So on this episode of our Lunch Hour Reviews, we're doing some housekeeping. We're going to talk about a new season of American Horror Story
that
so far I'm pretty thrilled with.
Me too. Yeah. I got worried. At first, I go, I don't know how I feel.
There were so many misdirects with the advertising going into it that when it finally played, you're still not sure, like, where it's going.
Right. But I was satisfied to talk to learn about Roanoke, you know, or to talk about Roanoke. Because as soon as, because my dad, you know, he was obsessed with Hotel. He finally, you know, finished it. And, you know, we were talking about Hotel and he's like, but this next one's Roanoke. And so we got really excited, started talking about that.
Human sacrifice. They were practicing devil worship.
I knew then we had to leave. When I saw my sister with Flora, I realized we had much bigger problems on our hands.
Technically,
so it's called Roanoke, and the documentary within, the sort of like meta film within, is referred to as My Roanoke Nightmare, which is similar in title to My Amityville Horror,
right?
Which follows Daniel Lutz, who was a child when the events occurred in Jay Anson's The Amityville Horror. Anyway, he tells his part of the story. I don't think I finished that documentary. I think I watched
really
elements
sad.
Of it. Yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah. And also knowing that, like, the Amityville haunting story, with the exception of, like, the original murder, everything else is kind of skirting the edges of bullshit.
Right.
And so it's kind of, I don't know, it's tough to get into.
Well, it's a documentary worth finishing. I'll tell you that, because there's some crazy, crazy shit that happens at the end.
Oh.
And
I'll go back.
Holy shit, that's insane.
Following the trend in true crime documentaries like The Jinx, Making a Murderer, and recently the Amanda Knox documentary, they frame the story as a back and forth between interviews and reenactments. In the reenactments, we see the bulk of the scary productions described by the documentary interviewees. So we have Sarah Paulson coming back.
Yeah.
She's playing Shelby Miller.
And she gets to be pretty and everything this time, too. You know, like, she doesn't have to be all sad or anything. She gets to wear nice clothes.
Right, she's supposed to be glamorous, right?
Yeah, and, well, she's like L.A., you know.
Yeah. She's married to Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character, Matt Miller. And they're joined by his sister, Lee, played by Angela Bassett. I will say I did really like, in particular, the actor who Cuba Gooding Jr. is portraying.
Yes.
Yeah. He and all the interviewees, I mean, I have to imagine it as far as acting challenges, like being a straight up civilian person telling a story. It's got to be a difficult thing because, like, your only direction is authenticity.
Right, and that's very tough.
It's challenging.
Yeah.
But yeah, in particular, the guy who Cuba Gooding Jr. is playing is my favorite to watch.
He does a great job of it. I think we're so familiar with Lily Rabe, and I think we're so familiar with her that it kind of, like, we know she's acting. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to be so authentic with her just because we've seen her every
year. We've seen a lot of her. And that's the thing, that with the exception of her, the other, like, you know, documentary people describing the story are not faces you've seen before, really.
Right.
Walking in that forest, your mind starts to play tricks. I couldn't explain it. Even if I could, what happened next made absolutely no sense.
So the story follows, after a violent assault in L.A., a couple won a place in the country. On Roanoke Island, North Carolina, they buy a house at auction for a song, pissing off the local hillbillies.
Yes.
So they spend a substantial amount of the first couple episodes convinced that the locals are fucking with them because here are these outsiders buying up our territory.
Right, and you clearly at the auction know that these guys are
trouble.
Not pleased.
Yeah. So it's one part Amityville haunting. The house has very distinct windows. With a dash of Blair Witch and the Roanoke disappearing, which you've got some specifics.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is Roanoke and Croatoan is one of those things that you kind of, I grew up like hearing about these things because I love crazy shit like that. Oh. And my parents love shit like that. so it was one of those like, oh, this is so cool. And then, you know, you go to the library and you actually learn a little bit about it and it's not as awesome.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort it's of kind of disappointing.
Demystifying what, you know, at face value, the headline of the story is a fucking compelling,
it's
shocking
very
thing.
Very cool. I mean, it is an interesting story because we have to know that the people who wrote Croatoan, that particular part of settling of Roanoke was the third time that they had tried.
Okay.
So they originally settle it in 1585. Some people come over.
Oh, that's even earlier.
Only
than
yeah, only a couple people come, and they end up leaving very quickly. And that's actually probably the most interesting story is the first guys, because the first guys get kind of tricked, sort of. They're run by this guy named Lane, and he wrote an original manuscript about his time there, but because he was supposed to be documenting their whole living there.
Okay.
He doesn't start documenting until 7 months later, so because he's not very good at his job. And then he goes and he takes a group of people and they go up the river for a while in search of this like golden town.
Of course.
Magic town. They don't find it. They actually have to end up eating their dogs. And he writes about that in his manuscript quite a lot because that's a big no-no. And they come back basically with their tails between their legs to the Roanoke people. The people in Roanoke are not doing well either. And another guy comes from England. They get their butts on the ship and leave.
These are the settler days where, you know, the white people who got off a boat are starving to death because they're, you know, they probably weren't farmers when they left England, and now they're trying to make do.
Exactly. So everyone goes except for about 15 people. They stay. And it's more like, it's best to think of it like they're holding a parking space. So they're like, we'll hang out here. You guys go, come back with food and shit because we're not doing so well. Whatever. When they come back for the second time, the 15 guys are gone.
Oh, okay.
The last time they come back, it's with 117 people. No one is left there. They were expecting that someone would still be at Roanoke, and no one is there.
And there's no, like, town ledger or anything like that
Nothing
to explain.
Like that. We have Lane, who was from the very original one, and he goes to London and kind of makes even more stories up and becomes famous, essentially, for making up these tales of America.
Now, there is an interesting story, the idea of, like, entrapping all these people who are relocating. And
he's the reason they even go back at all is because he says this is so great. And Raleigh says, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do it.
Huh. It's so, like he was serving the land and it's like request for more bodies.
It's kind of interesting. It's very interesting. So the last guys, though, that come back, there's about 117 people. And they get dropped off by this ship and the captain's, it's not easy to get to Roanoke at this particular time because of weather, because of certain things. So they drop them off as close as they can get. And they're like, well, wait, can you wait for us? And the captain's like, no. And they turn around immediately and just like, bye-bye, peace out. And that is that. Those people live and they're relatively friendly with the local people who are an Algonquin-speaking tribe of Native Americans.
Okay.
However, the first guy is kind of pissed off the local Native Americans, and that's probably why those 15 were not there the next time.
As is the American way. We don't realize that, like, hey, for the self-preservation, maybe leave Manifest Destiny in your back pocket. Let's not...
Exactly. Exactly. Well, if you know the story of Virginia Dare, have you ever heard of...
No.
Well, she's the... What? Where did you go to your history classes?
Not Virginia.
Yeah, but everyone knows Virginia Dare is the first child, English child born in America.
Okay, so the first American.
Well, no, a Native American would be the first American.
My mistake.
Yeah, so she's the first, like, European American.
Gotcha. Anglo-American.
Yes. So Virginia Dare's grandfather is the one who kind of runs the things. He says, I got to go back to England because we're not doing well here. I'm going to go get supplies and stuff. He goes to England and comes back 3 years later, and that's when he discovers everyone's gone.
Everyone's gone.
Not only is everyone gone, there on the stockade it says Croatoan, which is an island near Roanoke. It's about 50 miles away from Roanoke. But they had told him, you know, if we have to leave for any reason on this tree, we'll carve where we're going. And the only thing they carve on the tree is CRO. So it's like, was it unfinished or were they just lazy? Like,
the natives get them in the middle of the word.
Exactly. Exactly. What's going on? You know, they find the houses are completely gone, and not only completely gone, but totally disassembled nicely. It's not like there's nails or wood or, yeah, or things like this.
Maybe they were deconstructing to rebuild somewhere else.
Right. And there's a few chests with people's belongings buried under the dirt.
Huh.
But other than that, nothing. Nothing else.
Maybe it was a very neat hurricane. It was just exactly. Like, this goes there and that goes there.
I'll put this underground and we'll do this and we'll do this. Yeah, so he comes back. No one's there. There's no stories of it. We do know from later writing in around 1610, so about 20, 30 years later, we find out some other people do talk about this lost colony.
Mm-hmm.
And what we kind of discovered and why it's not so exciting. Like, you think, like, oh, all these people got taken out, all these things. It's not that exciting because they actually went to go live with the Algonquin-speaking tribes, probably, is what we can assume.
Okay.
And they just lived with them and then had kids with them and became just like
integrated.
Them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Powhatans kind of tried to retake over that area when the Europeans were coming in because of a prophecy that told of...
Why not?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's true, though. The prophecy was, these people are going to come in and take all your shit. And, I mean, it was kind of true. So he tries to take out this group of settlers and the settlers that had merged already with the native tribes.
Wow.
Yeah. They think that they lived for 20 years together, though. Like the original settlers and
And like fully integrated, it sounds like.
Yeah, completely.
So no reason to go back. But it's funny that, there's no record. So, one could get that, like, in the historical game of telephone, someone comes back from England or wherever, and they're trying to figure out where the town went.
Oh, yeah,
and
totally.
And where these people took off to. Yeah, that, I mean, it's a great mystery. So that's kind of playing in the background. They do play with the idea of... things written down and uncompleted, but still just ominous, creepy.
Oh, and if you
stuff.
Do though want some like really nice, a lot of historical writing, you know, is so snarky snark times. there's a really great article called "What Happened in Roanoke: Ralph Lane's Narrative Incursion" by Kathleen Donegan, and it really like lays out everything that Lane wrote and how absurd and wild it was. So it's a really fun read.
Oh, cool. It reminded me, when they first started talking about the storyline for this season, the first thing that jumped to mind was the found footage movie Yellow Brick Road.
Uh-huh, I can see that.
Which kind of plays with the idea of a town that picked up and left. In this case, it was a town that picked up in, like, the 30s or something like that.
Right,
because
there was
later.
A radio. Yeah.
There was a legit modern community.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they all marched off to this hill and were never seen from again.
I love Yellow Brick Road.
I love that
movie.
It's a really good one. I like that one a lot. But, as for other stuff, I've begun making trips to the New York Public Library and getting books and movies. They have a lot of free shit, and they'll just let you borrow it.
You said that everything smells like pee a little bit, though.
The movie section smells faintly of urine. But the DVDs themselves, thankfully, don't.
I wouldn't... I could see you, like, smelling it. Does this smell like pee? No? Does this one?
I mean, the description sounds great, but it does smell like pee.
I wish they had, like, the thing so you could see how many people check them out. You know, like how many people have watched?
Yeah, I guess they don't do that for like public in school libraries. You get that, but local.
I would just like to see how many people like checked out certain movie. How many people have checked out The Ice Cream Man in the last month? Probably lots. Probably lots. It's a very popular movie.
There was a copy of Ice Cream Man there.
Of course, there was. It should be in every library.
I did get the blaxploitation movie Blackenstein, right? Which I've been talking about incessantly.
Yes.
Not on the podcast, obviously, but you and I.
Yes.
The newish movie, The Boy, not the better Clay McLeod Chapman penned film by the same name. This one,
it's the one
actress,
with Maggie.
Maggie from Walking Dead.
Yeah.
That was just okay. Joe Dante's The Howling. But my favorite of the batch was Chan-Wook Park's first English language film, Stoker, from 2013. And I loved it. It's practically a perfect film.
Mm-hmm.
It's really creepy. It's unsettling. It stays with you. It's just, you know, there are elements that run like a loop in your head because it's unique. I'm interested in like finding a context to talk about that one in sort of greater scope. But yeah. I dug that one a lot. I also got Eli Roth's Green Inferno, which I watched for the first time.
You knew better.
Ever since Cabin Fever, I've been giving this fucking guy second chances. And that was a long time ago. I will say Hostel 2 is a decent film.
I do like Hostel 2.
Everything else is like noticeably bad writing, and everything else is slightly better than bad writing.
I always feel like that Tyra video where Tyra's like, we were all rooting for you.
Oh, and she's, yeah.
Yeah, because...
she's so heartbroken.
Like, the thing is I am constantly having to defend him.
Well, you can defend his roots, Hostel specifically.
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. So I always like defend his place in everything, but like... he makes it really difficult.
There's very little redeeming.
Yeah.
And so,
but he's so important.
Guys, I'm really sick.
We're all sick.
No. I need a bathroom.
What? No.
So I thought it would be fun as a feature for our Patreon subscribers. On the day that I watched it, we were G-chatting. Mm-hmm. You were watching American Horror Story Season 2 Asylum.
Yes, I was.
And I was watching this, and we were sort of corresponding, and I was giving you, like, pertinent details and absurdities, and it wound up being pretty funny. So I've sort of set it up so that it'll be its own sketch as a sort of review conversation.
Making the most of not being allowed to sit next to each other and talk to each other anymore.
Yeah. I guess in one way or another, it's kind of a necessity being the mother of invention that like this wound up being pretty funny. And if it was if it was just a dialogue that we had, we would have, you know, gone to lunch and forgotten about it.
Right.
But
it's
in this case, we've got it in writing. So for our Patreon subscribers, that's something to look forward to. We've got a sketch coming your way. That's a good note to join us on patreon.com/rantsmacabre. We're also on social media. We are at rantsmacabre on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And our website is therantsmacabre.com.
You can donate or get merch from there.
Yeah. For listeners who've made it this far, know that we are going to do a little competition of movie recommendations for a merch pack. So for a magnet, sticker, and button, and also a personalized note. And the point of this is that you, the listener, will recommend your favorite, you know, off the beaten track,
mm-hmm.
you know, not... uber popular horror movie, and we're gonna go through them and pick a winner, and we'll send you out a merch pack, and we'll also do a lunch hour review on your particular film.
Yes.
So figure out like what is your obscure movie that you want to recommend to us and challenge us with. If you're choosing The Greasy Strangler, it's too late, we've already covered that.
Yeah, I'm not watching it again. You lose.
Used to be a little boy.
You've been listening to The Rants Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rants Macabre, contact Ken at Fangoria.com. This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.
Kill